get out of bed, fill your cup and get ahead with WKGN. 1-3-4-0.
Live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios in Knoxville, it's the Morning Show on Fan Run Radio. Here are your hosts, John Reed and Bob Baskerville.
Back in the booth, back on the airwaves, coming at you live from the White Claw Hard Seltzer Studios. It is a beautiful championship Thursday here in Knoxville. John Reed, Bob Baskerville, Sam Beard, three champions sitting here. You driving around in your car, sitting on your couch, standing in front of your mirror, brushing your teeth, getting ready for school. You are a champion as well. Bob, great morning to you. How are you, my friend?
Good morning. I am good. Got the day off to a good start because, like you said, we're champions. But also, it's a sign. I forgot to set an alarm last night.
Ooh.
And I still woke up 5 minutes before I was supposed to get up. Just got up. Just felt it.
That's me every morning. But to me, it's like I wake up every 2 hours. Did you sleep through the night and just wake up one shot?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, I did.
That's nice.
Although I didn't. I mean, I went to bed a little later than I wanted to. It was, I don't know, 11:30, something like that. But yes, I slept nonstop. Got up. Didn't even realize it. I was just looking at my phone like, oh, I got to shut off my alarm because, you know, it's going to go off here in a few minutes. And I looked and they weren't even on. So that's a... We're living right. You can feel it already.
I don't know what I would have thought had I rolled in here and we set up and you hadn't gotten here on time. If you overslept, I don't know what I would do. I already thought it was weird that you were the third one of three, because usually when I come down the hill, either the gate's locked and you're waiting on me, or you and Sam have pulled in and I'm bringing up the rear. But not this morning. Bob partied that championship a little too hard last night.
Yeah. I even brought extra cheese today. I'm treating myself.
Let's go. You and that damn cheese, a little rat over there. Sam, top of the morning to you. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm feeling fantastic. Hard not to after last night. Woke up feeling a champion. Went to bed being a champion. Rest my head on the pillow tonight. I'll be a champion. Feels good. Feels good. Can't complain.
Job ain't finished. Job ain't done. But no. The first leg felt pretty good last night. It was one of those nights, one of those wins, and we've had a couple of them, and I've talked about it, but it's one of those, for me at least, that you want to consume every little bit of content after the game you can get.
Mm-hmm.
You want to talk with your friends. The group chat's fired up. You're posting. You want to read all the tweets. You want to circle around back to your group chats, back to the tweets. You can't get enough of it. That's how it felt last night. Wasn't always pretty, Bob. Wasn't always pretty, but the final score is beautiful.
Absolutely. As I was watching with my wife last night at the beginning of the game, she's really gotten into following the team this season. She's always been a bit of a basketball fan, but more so this year. That said, she still needed a little bit of a primer about South Carolina. She didn't go to the home game with me. I went with a buddy on that one. So she didn't know much about them. I was explaining to her, it's like, this likely won't be, as you put it, it won't be a pretty game to watch. These guys play a certain way, and they did. Although I felt like in the back half of the first half, they were playing our game, which was not a good formula for them. I felt like they were putting up threes, and they did a lot of that in Knoxville, but it felt like we were getting out in transition a lot more than we did when we were playing them here at home. Felt good.
Yeah, I thought we had made a concerted effort to get out and do that. And then at times it felt like, okay, they've gotten us back to their pace, and we're going to have to beat them playing their own style. But I did feel like early, especially, Tennessee was wanting to set the tone and say, hey, we're going to get out and we're going to run. Run, run, run. And I thought that was good from the beginning. And South Carolina, much like the first time, I guess they looked at the matchups and looked at Tennessee and just said, hey, the only way we're going to do this is if we shoot a bunch of threes. Because it seemed like that was the only thing they were shooting for much of the first half. Just chucking up three after three after three. At any point last night, did you think Tennessee was going to blow it?
I didn't. I really didn't. I felt it was going to be a tough game. When we got up, I think what it was like 14 points, I didn't think that was going to last. I thought, okay, maybe win by double digits, 9 or 10, something like that. But I didn't think we were going to build on that. They're just, aside from that loss that they had, I think, to Alabama, I mean, I don't think South Carolina gets blown out too often. They pretty much keep things tight. So we were talking about that on the RTI thread yesterday about the total. Like, somebody reached out and said, does that feel like that, what, one? It was 139.5, I think, to start for the total. It's like, doesn't feel like a lot. The over seems interesting, but then our guy Ryan Shumpert said, just remember how much they like to slow the game down and everything else, and it kind of bared itself out that way.
Sam, at any point did you think Tennessee was going to blow it?
I felt pretty confident, honestly, throughout the most part of it. I think maybe the only portion maybe in that game was like 13-minute mark kind of in the second half. I think we were up like 6 or 8 points. And then, you know, I think you did a great job of pulling away kind of in that stretch. But, no, I mean, I got nervous for a second, but I never really felt like it was slipping away. I think that you were trading buckets with them whenever they were kind of starting to build some momentum.
Yeah, Tennessee went on a couple of those scoring droughts again.
Mm-hmm. For sure.
But we kind of got what we wanted. Well, a championship. Remember, Tennessee champions. But here on the show, we had kind of talked about how we hadn't had that final minute, one possession game yet. And you got that because you allowed them to kind of hang around, and connected a couple jumpers. You stretched the lead back out to 9 with 2 minutes left. But then they kept coming, and it's a 3-point game with, you know, about a minute 15 seconds left, and Tennessee able to get Jonas to the free throw line, get a stop, go back to the free throw line. Then you miss the front end of the 1-on-1, so then you're having to still defend in that weird spot where you're up like 4. It's a weird spot to be in at the end of the game where, you know, if you don't play – it properly, you could turn around and lose the game. It felt a little bit like the South Carolina LSU game to me in that regard, because, you know, LSU just kept coming. South Carolina blew that lead. It felt like that, except reversed a little bit. And when you're up 4 or even 3, you know, 30 seconds before that, you're worrying, like, are we about to just let them kind of steal this? Are they going to come down, get a bucket, make it a 1-point game, and then we're going to have to hit clutch free throws and they're going to steal this? But they didn't. Tennessee's defense came through, made some plays, and you hit enough clutch free throws. Hell, you even covered the spread. How about that? 5.5, 6.5, whatever you got it at, you felt good. You might have been really mad at the very end of the game on that offensive rebound dunk. You might have been like, oh, my God, they lost by 5 on that. And the ref's like, no basket. Then you hear that they're going to review it, and you're like, oh, my God. Then you hear the ref, no basket, call stands. You're like, yeah. I won my money, and my team won a championship.
I had a little football in my hands that I was kind of, like, nervously spinning around at the end of that game, and then they had that dunk to potentially not cover, and I just spiked it on the ground. I was like, damn it.
Oh, so you had some on the balls.
Yeah. But then, thanks to that ref.
I had nothing on the game last night. I was going to live bet it, and I was paying attention all the way through, and I just never felt good about anything that kept coming up. I was like, I'm just leaving it alone.
Yeah, there was never really a moment live betting-wise. I had a nice little chunk on Tennessee to win the SEC. I had a nice little three-team parlay that I did 2 legs the night before in Tennessee Moneyline last night to have some money on that, but then I kind of blew it chasing – at least a little bit on Tennessee's offense to score some more points. I needed 67.5 points.
Oh,
so Yeah, they scored 66. I was hoping, like, come on, get down here and get this free throw, Michi. Get down here, get fouled. Let's extend this out. Foul one more time. Nope, didn't happen. But I was still happy, still made some money to pay for March Madness, these upcoming trips to go follow this team around. Vibes are high. Tennessee champions. Once again, remember that. First time they have won the SEC outright since 2008. 16 years in the making.
Had Grant Williams bringing the morning show mojo with him over to Columbia, sitting behind the bench.
Long day for him.
Yeah.
I was wondering, you know, the night before last, whenever I was thinking about the Grant Williams interview, I was like, huh, I wonder if he'll go now. Now that he's in Charlotte, he came here for the Auburn game, I wonder if he'll just make the trip over to Columbia. But then I didn't bother up to look how close or how far away it was. But Grant's balled up, man. He likes being there. It's a big part of him getting to come back to Charlotte is he's not that far away from Knoxville or, you know, SEC country.
How about that shot, did you see, of him and Al Wilson? They were sitting together.
Yeah.
Wilson just looks like a badass still.
Oh, yeah.
I couldn't help but thinking Al Wilson being like, oh, my God, I want this guy. Please shut up. Like,
yeah.
Please stop talking to me about
Catan.
Drop coverages and what they need to do. Just let me watch ball. I just want to watch my boys win a championship. Please stop it. 865-546-8200 if you want to weigh in and talk about your champion Vols. If you thought Tennessee was going to blow it, shame on you. Shame on you. If you tweeted out the big orange cup, shame on you. If you were nervous going into the game last night and you thought Tennessee might blow it, shame on you, because this team has shown that they can answer the bell. This team has shown that they can win on the road. This team has shown that they are the best in the SEC. We'll continue the conversation after the break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio.
Good morning. Starting to pick up pretty good now, coming off that ramp from Western.
Some of the content that you consume after the game included Rick Barnes in the locker room. And this is why I don't buy the cliches that the coaches and Grant Williams tell us and try to sell us about one game at a time. That's our goal, blah, blah, blah. Because you had Rick Barnes himself tell it to his team, maybe not knowing the video was coming out, but Rick Barnes straight up tells them, we want to play on Monday, a.k.a. get to the national championship. I'd imagine the ultimate goal to win that national championship. But in the locker room, after locking up a game, it wasn't like, hey, great job, one game at a time, guys. We got to focus on Kentucky, blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, keep the bigger goal in mind. We want to play on Monday, and tonight was a huge step for that. Which I think, you know, is true. To get to Monday and to have the best path possible to play for the national championship, you need to be a one seed. And last night, winning at South Carolina was another big feather in Tennessee's resume cap in terms of getting that one seed. Joe Lunardi has bent the knee, Bob.
Yep. It's more like it, finally.
A razor-thin feather in the cap.
Yeah.
It's funny how it went from not close to all of his peers saying, actually, I already have Tennessee as a one seed. And he's like, well, okay, it's razor-thin. To now, like, you know, Tennessee is his one seed. After saying, like, Arizona has to lose, guys. Arizona has to fall down the stretch for Tennessee to pass them. Okay, fine. I'll put them ahead since everyone else is. Yeah, phony. Fraud. Joe Frenati. Is there anything specifically from last night you want to talk about, Bob, in the game? Because, got to be honest, the game to me is a little bit of a haze between staying up too late and just having the emotion of the championship. There aren't very many details from the actual game that I remember outside of a couple defensive stops, South Carolina failing to try to draw a desperation foul on a three-pointer when the guy should have just shot the ball, and Dalton Connect's four-point play, maybe. Is there anything that stands out to you from last night?
A couple of small things. First off, you know, everybody was talking up about, when we were too, about South Carolina being on spring break, et cetera. I mean, that was a bigger crowd than I expected.
Yeah.
And did it not sound on the TV call, at least maybe it was just my TV, but it sounded loud. I mean, it sounded very loud there, the way, and maybe ESPN was putting some more ambient mics around and, you know, decided to take that approach. But much more intensity than I was expecting, which good on South Carolina, although it sounded like a lot of Tennessee fans made the trip too. Again, we talked about in segment one, I never felt like it was game over until like about 20 seconds ago, where it was like, whatever it was, we were three possessions ahead at that point. It's like, okay. Because they did just enough. You know, B.J. Mack hit that three late to cut it, I think, to six. And then what? They had it to three at one point, right? It
was, yeah, they got it three with a minute 15 left.
One possession. So the other thing that I took away was I saw you tweeted something about it too, John. The refs didn't take over the game, although in some instances it was almost to a fault. I mean, it was pretty rough and tumble in there. But a couple of the calls, like the one you just talked about where the South Carolina guy leaned into Mayshak, I felt like we got away with one. It was not a foul, but that in a lot of instances would have been called a foul this season. So I was happy to see that. And, you know, South Carolina only had 10 foul shots. This game, if you look at it in points, points scored, besides the obvious final score, Tennessee outscored South Carolina 19-5 at the free throw line. So I felt like for once it was one of those games where, you know, there were a couple calls where the refs, I felt, kind of swallowed their whistle. But overall, it felt a lot better than, what, the Auburn game where everything was just getting, you know, so dissected you couldn't get any sort of game flow going whatsoever.
Yeah, you know, 22 to 10 free throw attempts, but, you know, they intentionally fouled, what, three times down the stretch? I think added six to that. So 16 to 10, not a huge discrepancy, especially when you look and see that, you know, damn near half of South Carolina's shot attempts were threes. You're not going to get to the free throw line a lot when that's the case, like when you're not attacking the rim. So, like, I thought the officials, they didn't take over at any point. You know, I was prepared for the free-flowing first half to be followed by a screeching to a halt foul fest in the second half. And there were, you know, quite a bit of fouls in the second half, but it wasn't to a, you know, a true detriment to the game. I didn't think, like, oh, my God, here they go. You know, 7 minutes went by in the first half without a foul. And then the one they did call was, I thought, a bad call. It was a charge on Dalton Connect that I think should have been a three-point play. And maybe Tennessee just kind of blows them out if that's the case, because they had, you know, a nice little lead. And Connect was going. And that kind of took Connect out of his game a little bit, because he came out hot. Connect came out and I think hit his first layup and his first three. Maybe his first two threes. And you're like, okay.
His first three, I think.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
He's like, well, this guy's locked in. Here we go. We're about to get a legendary championship performance from him. And he still ended up with 26 points. And you know, Tennessee scored 66 as a whole. So, you know, tap out your calculator and figure out what percentage that is. But he came to play and he carried your offense early. Him and Adu themselves, you know, matched South Carolina for much of the first half. They had 22 points at half, and South Carolina, I think, had 24. And then the second half, you know, you had Zakai make a couple plays, and you got just enough for some other guys to kind of make up for Connect going through a little bit of a rough stretch. But the officiating, I thought, was pretty fair. It was nice that they didn't fall for that clear no call on Mayshak on the attempted three. And Tennessee hit just enough free throws and scored just enough points. And really, another game, Bob, where you could say they won it with their defense.
Yeah, I would agree.
38% from South Carolina, 27% from three, and then that good old free throw defense. South Carolina struggled from the free throw line as well. The moment a little bit too big for them.
Tennessee had 14 assists on 20 buckets for the game, which, again, you know, lower scoring game, but only seven turnovers, too, in a game that was super physical. So I felt like, from that perspective, all those intangibles, they did a nice job. I do think, how far do you see South Carolina going to the NCAA tournament? I don't see them going very far.
Nah, I mean, that's a team that's going to be susceptible to upset in round one. I mean, like, could they go on a run? Sure. Sure. They play tough. They play hard. They play slow and try to ground you out. And they've also been lucky. But, like, if I'm betting, like, they don't make it to the Sweet 16, if that's the question.
Yeah. I would agree.
Like, and I don't think they're going to be seeded where they're supposed to make it to the Sweet 16. Like, they're going to be a 5 or a 6 and be, you know, underdogs in round 2 if, you know, everything kind of shakes out right in that bracket. But, like, that's a team that gets bounced early. Like, if they got beat in the first round by a good mid-major team, I don't think that surprises any of us.
Well, that's what I was going to say. They seem to be, like, the prototypical target of a 5-12, 6-11 game.
Yeah.
I could see them getting knocked out in the first round. Maybe winning one, but I agree. That would be about as far as I see them go.
Yep. You know, we've talked about their metrics not lining up with their record. And, you know, sometimes it doesn't matter. Sometimes, you know, there are outliers. But eventually that catches up to you. And I think that's what's going to happen to that team that's kind of overachieving. I thought the moment last night, if I'm looking for things that worry me, I thought the moment last night was too big for Meshack. I don't know if it was the Alabama performance that kind of got to his head, but there was one particular play that was maybe the worst possession Tennessee's had all season. And it made me mad because, like, I want to say in the game, like, you were in a scoring drought and, like, you needed to kind of get going. And you got, like, a steal or rebound, and Meshack brings the ball up the court. And, like, he has Kinect streaking on the wing next to him for a fast break. And he just doesn't give it to him. And we know, like, Kinect loves that trailing wing three or that trailing wing pump fake three, get to the rim and, like, get a layup. And instead, Meshack looked him off, went to the left. I think it was him and Gainey play patty cake over there, and Meshack ends up dribbling the ball and losing the ball out of bounds or a turnover. And, like, I was like, that to me is the worst possession. Get Meshack out. Like, he ain't got it tonight. So that was maybe
I do remember that possession.
Yeah.
Like, he dribbled for like 20 seconds.
Yeah, like he brought the ball up the court, looked off Kinect, turned an advantage into a disadvantage, and then, yeah, like, never passed the ball and, like, turned it over. And you know, that worried me because – I know Tennessee's not going to be on the road again, but, you know, you're gonna need to be able to play in high-pressure, high-leverage situations. And maybe it was just a bad night for him. And he'll be fine. He'll get back. He'll kind of get grounded and come back and be ready to play. But I didn't think Awaka was good either. Gainey only shot one time. He hit the shot. But, like, yeah, the bench didn't give you much last night. And that's the one thing I would worry about coming out of the game. But we have enough of a sample size for the season to not overreact too much.
Tennessee had 2 missed dunks that would have been, like, soul crushers. Yeah. Awaka was one of them, and then the alley-oop to Triple J. Mm-hmm. Those would have been
those
so
both
nice.
Got me out of my seat.
Yeah, I know. I thought also Adu started out very strong. But I felt like he played timid in the second half. Also, not for nothing, he was the only guy that missed free throws. He missed. Yep. He was 2 of 5 at the line. So we got to the line a lot at the end, like you said, John, with some of the intentionals. But he missed 3 of those. There was that one play with Jonas where he got the ball underneath. Do you remember this? I mean, he was at the bus. He was at the basket, and he passed it out. It felt uncharacteristic of him and the way he had been playing overall. I don't know. I wouldn't say the moment got too big for him, but he definitely must have felt the physicality of South Carolina. I don't know what it was, but it felt like he was a little passive there.
I thought ultimately your big three performed at a championship level. Kinect with 26, Zakai with 13 and 7, only 1 turnover. Jonas Adu with 14 and 9. And I thought Adu made some big buckets to start the game to help set the tone.
Agree.
I want to say he had 8, you know, fairly early. Second half wasn't great. Did hit just enough free throws to give you some breathing room. But, yeah, I thought ultimately all 3 of those guys played well. And then you look at your other 2 starters. Another game for Vescovy where just doesn't do anything offensively. 2 points, but has a couple steals. Plays a couple, you know, has a couple big plays. Josiah, you know, felt like your best post defender last night. He had a couple big blocks. Does his thing. I thought it was kind of telling. They talked about how a coach had told them, like, they don't even have Santi on the scouting report anymore offensively. Did you hear that?
Yeah.
Tidbit.
Yeah.
It's like, hey, he doesn't do anything anymore. We can't devote any time to get game planning for him.
I've come to the point where all I do is rally around all the other little things he's doing that were smart. Like last night, they did that switch where this happened a lot in Knoxville. I think Will was talking about it yesterday, where all of a sudden you had Zakai up top matched up against BJ Mack, and then he passed off, rolled down. Zakai stayed put. Santi went over and switched off to him, which is still a mismatch overall. But then Santi's the guy that kind of, you know, he kind of knocked the ball out, created a jump ball, which possession was to Tennessee. He did a lot of smart things, but, yeah, I mean, the scoring, it's, as I put in our notes, one of the better two-point performances I've seen from all the little things. But, man, that doesn't feel great saying that about 2 points, but that's what it's become with him.
Nah, you know, he and Josiah, we've kind of put them under a microscope for much of the season, and you know, people have said they got to be better if Tennessee is going to win. I don't know if they have to be better offensively, because they both are still contributing so much to everything else outside of scoring. Both those guys are, and it'll take the other three, Adu, Connect, and Zakai, to continue to be able to score 75-80% of the team's points. But if those three, you know, can pull their weight, then the other two are perfect complements to that. And I think both have shown they can still make big buckets and score points, you know, and they're not complete zeros. And Josiah's had his moments and ended the game at Alabama on Saturday. And I know Vescovi's got like a 14-point performance out of nowhere waiting for him, too, at some point this season.
Yeah, the thing I like to see is you saw the video was on social media last night, again, Grant Williams and Santi hugging it out. And, you know, you can tell he's all about winning. You know, Triple J is, too. I loved seeing right after the game, Triple J, it looked like he seeks out Connect. Big hug, big bro hug, you know. And, I mean, those guys feel very, as a team, they just feel very, very aligned right now. And it's nice to see, because they should be. I mean, they're winning, but just feels like they're all on the same mission for sure. No matter how they get there, they know what they want at the end.
It's a tight-knit group. That makes it easier to root for them. It makes it easier for fans to feel connected to a team that feels connected, that feels like they're on the same page. They clearly love Rick Barnes and want to do something special for him. Like, you could feel that love. And he's got the love for, you know, Josiah and Vescovi. He's talked about that and them being five-year guys and the relationships they've developed. And, of course, Zakai and Jonas. And then even the newcomers, like Connect and Ganey, it feels like there's some love there. Of course, Ganey does have love on the coaching staff. His dad's here. And Connect has done, you know, wonders for Rick Barnes's season and chances to win a championship. But everyone feels, and that's without even mentioning, you know, Meshack, who, you know, Barnes has talked about how much he loves him. It's a close team. It's a fun team to root for. I tweeted it last night. I've talked about it on here. Does feel like it. You're nearing the climax. You are here. It's the best Tennessee basketball season of all time, and just appreciate it. You got your first little piece of hardware last night. I don't know if Tennessee will cut down any nets after Senior Day, you know, to celebrate the SEC championship. I don't know if after they play Kentucky, especially if they beat Kentucky, if they will take the time to have a net to hang in the trophy case anywhere, but you got your first one. You got your first championship. How would you grade last night's performance? Because, you know, it was when we said, like, I didn't think Tennessee needed an A-plus game or an A game. I thought they could go in there and win with a B game. It felt like another kind of B-minus performance, though, which is nice to go on, you know, go on the road, get a quad one win, and not have to play your best. I want to see this team kind of start clicking on all cylinders again, though. Like, maybe that happens on Saturday at home. You got a good opponent like Kentucky that could kind of give your offense some stats as you get ready for postseason play.
I'd grade it as a solid B. Again, you know, if you think about what was on the line for South Carolina, the way they play, it was on the road. sure, Tennessee's got a better game in them. We hope we see some of those. But I certainly didn't find it as disappointing. It was kind of, in a lot of ways, maybe what I expected. You know, the win, and it did get a little close there at the end. But as we said earlier in the show, I don't think I ever had a doubt. And that wasn't just being a fan. That was just being knowing the way the game was flowing and everything else. I think we all felt that way.
A B performance probably gets you to the Elite Eight, like, fairly comfortably. So, like, this team playing a B game is still better than a lot of teams in the country. It was better than South Carolina. Listener writes in saying he didn't feel like Adu did enough to protect the rim last night. Yeah, I agree. I thought Tennessee, especially early, it stood out to me. I guess maybe because I expected Tennessee to be a little bit more fired up, but it felt like South Carolina was hanging around with offensive rebounds. It felt like they ended up getting 12 offensive rebounds. And on the other end, Tennessee was doing that as well. Tennessee got a lot of second-chance points. They ended up with 10 offensive rebounds themselves. But, yeah, I thought Tennessee and Adu in particular, because, you know, that's kind of his job. I thought they gave up a lot at the rim. And in terms of defensive rebounding, didn't do a great job of that.
When they went down and just started, you know, making sure that they were trying to drive to the bucket and just try and get fouled too, I thought Tennessee just kind of got complacent a little bit and just let it be a little bit too easy for them getting to the bucket. You know, like, I think there's a couple way too many easy layups there in that stretch that they were on.
Yeah, and you know, the crowd's fired up. They're going crazy. You know, South Carolina's trying to have their last gasp run and give it all they have, and now or never type of thing is probably what they're talking about in the huddle as they're trying to win a championship. And, like, sometimes in basketball, you know, you talk about it being a game of runs. It's about weathering the storm, right? And, like, this Tennessee team has had to do that a lot recently. They had to weather the storm at Alabama, too, you know, in a couple of scoring droughts. They had to do it again last night where, hey, sometimes this team's going to look like they don't know what the hell they're doing. It feels like they'll go 5 minutes, 6 minutes without a field goal. They did it again last night a couple times. But then the floodgates will open a little bit, and you'll get a four-point play, and you'll make a couple plays.
Jumping over to the announced team for a second, I know sometimes I'm a little hard on Jimmy Dykes and all his superlatives for Tennessee, but after what we listened to on Saturday night in Tuscaloosa, I'll take Dykes and Hart anytime.
Dykes loves Tennessee. He appreciates the SEC. It is refreshing to listen to. I like listening to Jimmy Dykes as well.
I loved the line last night. I put it on X where Jimmy Dykes was talking with Tom Hart, and he says something had happened with Dalton Connect. He goes, you know what's interesting about Dalton Connect? And Hart immediately fires back everything. I mean, it was like that's – it felt like they're kind of our honorary UT TV call. I mean, because they've done – think about how many games they've done this year.
Over the last handful of years. I mean, yeah. You know, it feels like Jimmy Dykes is always in Knoxville.
Yeah. I think it's gotten even more profound lately just because ESPN went through so many layoffs and everything else. They've really pared down their teams, which is probably good. But, yeah, we got an SEC guy and Hart who spent time in Knoxville. It just felt good hearing those guys in a game like that last night. I was – sometimes I've had some eye rolls with Jimmy, but I thought he was good last night on the call. I really did.
They gave South Carolina their props too.
They did.
I mean, like, if you're South Carolina, you can't be too upset at the love fest that Tennessee received, because it sucks being on the other side of that, especially when your team's playing at home. I thought, you know, I still like the South Carolina team. Not that I think they're good, but I think that they play hard, and, you know, sometimes that's all you need to kind of be likable. But their fans crying, and it left a little bit of a sour taste in my mouth. Just be happy you got there, guys. Come on.
Throwing ice on the court.
I thought they were going to tee them up.
Yeah.
I was screaming, tee them up! Tee them up! They're delaying the game.
Tell you what, I like Michi Johnson, man. He is tough. Tough-minded kid.
Yeah, shame for them. They're going to go home the first weekend of the tournament. Tennessee will not be... knock on wood, because they're good, and they find ways to win. They create ways to win. You can count on the defense. You can count on players making big plays offensively. It's all we ask for. It's a well-rounded basketball team. Sam, send us a break. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. It feels great. We got the job done, but at the same time, the job's not done. We've got the SEC tournaments and the big one, said Dalton Connect after the game. Job ain't finished, job ain't done. You got the first one, despite how mad it made McLovin from the Dan Patrick Show. What was the point of that? Him being mad that Dalton Connect and all the Tennessee players, or at least more than just Dalton Connect, was pointing to their ring finger, you know, celebrating a championship. And then you had Andrew Perloff, McLovin, quote tweet it and talk about how it was a weird look for Connect to be excited about winning a championship when there's still so much to play for. It's okay. Like, professionals, they still celebrate. For the most part, I've seen plenty of teams in the NBA, the NFL, and baseball celebrate making the playoffs, right? Celebrate winning a division. And I'm not saying you like go have a parade. I'm not saying you pop champagne and go crazy. But like, it's okay to point to your ring finger. You won a championship. That's what Tennessee was after last night. They went into an SEC rival. A team that has, at least a school, that has been a roadblock to you having championships. You know, that was in the back of my mind at least a little bit. Now, South Carolina basketball and this basketball team at Tennessee, a little bit different than what's happened in football. But, Bob, I couldn't help but think of 2016. South Carolina beats you, takes you out of control for your SEC East title. 2021 knocks you out of, you know, the college football playoff. Couldn't help but think about how some of the best seasons in Tennessee history have been spoiled by South Carolina and that it was set up for them to do it again, but they couldn't get the job done.
Speaking of that, I was expecting to see maybe our guy Shane Beamer there somewhere at the game. Would have just pissed me off, but if he was there, they would have caught him on camera, so he must not have been there.
Yeah, well, what was he doing? I know we get mad at Eli Drinkwitz for being there, but hell, Eli was there for a winless team. Shane Beamer couldn't be bothered to come watch an SEC championship game.
Yeah.
Dawn Staley was there. They talked about how she like held her team from going on a trip. I guess they're playing on the road. Is it today they're playing on the road? Because sometimes the SEC, I know, has those Thursday games.
They're in conference tournament.
Oh, they're in the conference tournament. Okay, so.
Yeah, but so they are. Well, they're in Greenville, so they're just down the road.
Okay. But yeah, they were talking about how they were supposed to be there last night, but Don said, no, we're going to stay and watch. We're going to stay and support the team. It's a big game. Don could be bothered. Now, maybe that's because she knows that she's got a juggernaut and it doesn't matter. Nobody in the SEC can beat her, and she doesn't care and doesn't want to stay in a hotel bed when she could stay in her own bed. Maybe that was really what it was. But Shane Beamer couldn't be bothered to be there.
I mean, they had arguably one of their best players of all time, their Alex English, who's back from almost the Bernard King era. He was there. I thought South Carolina, that from that perspective, their fan base, and it felt like the big game that it was, and they for the most part did their part, except for them whining and crying afterwards. But I was just surprised. I was surprised no Shane Beamer. So,
and by the way, if Shane Beamer was there, it's more telling that he wasn't. Yeah. He's not famous enough to get put on camera. So if you did see him there, did see a picture there, don't think I'm an idiot because I didn't see it on TV. ESPN didn't think he was famous enough to show. But Tennessee and Dalton Connect deserve to celebrate this championship. They deserve to. It's one that we haven't had in a long time. Standing alone as champions. No one else will get to put up any type of banner, get to add any type of number. There's no worrying about tiebreakers or schedules or anything because Tennessee took control and took advantage of opportunities.
We talked in the last segment about how together this team is, and I want to pose the question to both of you. I know the answer for myself. Is this your favorite Tennessee team at this point? It is mine. I will say that.
Yeah, I mean, everyone feels like it at the time. You know, I remember thinking the same thing about Candy Chandler's run and how much you kind of fell in love with that team down the stretch, and then them going to Tampa and beating Kentucky and winning, you know, the first SEC tournament championship in 40 years. This team is right now, but they're also still alive. They have the benefit of hope still. And every other team in Tennessee history has been, you know, clouded by a disappointing loss or a heartbreaking loss. Right? Every team in their history at Tennessee has had their season end poorly. Or leave you a little unsatisfied. I mean, I know some teams have overachieved, and, you know, the Elite Eight team, that was a great run, good job, first Elite Eight in school history, but then losing that one-point game at Michigan State stung a little bit. Obviously, this team hasn't done that yet. So, yeah, right now it's easy to say this is your favorite team.
But I'm also talking about the vibe of the team. Like, last year's team goes to the Sweet 16. I'll just come clean. I know he contributed here and there. I couldn't stand Euros. As a player, Kumwa frustrated me. There's nobody on that team right now, even with some of the struggles we've seen Santiago and even Triple J have. There's nobody on that team that I am like, God, they bother me. They just, I don't know. They just feel, like I said, I feel like I get to channel their togetherness, the way they're playing right now, the way, like you said earlier, the way they're playing hard. They recognize this. There's a chance for something special for their Hall of Fame coach, all of those things. That's the other intangible. Of course, the success level will tell the tale, but that was the stuff that matters to me, too, is, you know, in effect, you kind of have a one-and-done player with Kinect, but, you know, some of these other teams, even with Kennedy, you just knew, same thing, it was only going to be one season, and I don't know, this one just, we've been using that term different. It just feels different to me.
Yeah. You know, it's easy. You know, I didn't like Urosh at all either. And Kumwa drove you crazy. But whenever you roll around in the mud and you punk out Duke, got to be honest, I love that team a lot last year when they did that. Now, you know, that's easy to say after a big tournament win. But, like, you're like, oh, man, this team's so tough. This team doesn't care about anything. Like, they just want to play hard, and they don't care what you think about them. It's not going to be pretty. It's just going to get done. And then they lay an egg against Florida Atlantic, and, you know, it kind of sours the way you feel about that team. But Rick seems happy. Rick seems locked in. You know, the guys, you talk about the one and done, and that's fair. Like, Kinect doesn't have a lot of years here at Tennessee, but it's crazy how much differently you feel about him as a quote-unquote one-and-done versus, you know, guys in the past. And maybe it's because he's a one-and-done that isn't the entitled freshman coming in learning how to play big-time basketball. Maybe it's because it's a guy that, like, you can root easier for. Not saying I don't like the one-and-done basketball players, but, like, it is easy to root for somebody who has gone, you know, the JUCO route to Northern Colorado and an underdog that's came in and has, like, shined in his big moment. It is easier to kind of get behind that. And also, like, knowing that, like, there's no way he could come back. Like, I don't know if Dalton Kinect would stay at Tennessee if he was, like, a junior right now. You know, I would say that he would almost assuredly have to go to the pros, right, if you're going to be a draft lottery pick. But, like, he said, like, hey, man, I wish I could have more years at Tennessee. I wish I had more time here. And you believe it. Like, when you see it on his face, like, he knows he made the right choice, and he knows he feels embraced by this fan base. So, like, you know the hourglass is ticking. And that doesn't always happen now in college basketball, especially on the great teams, right? Like, I don't know for sure if the numbers have changed during the transfer portal era or whatever. But, like, when I think of college basketball and I think of their elite teams, I think of talented freshmen and sophomores. Mixed in with some juniors, of course, and you'll have, like, one or, like, maybe one senior that's a glue guy. You don't think of, like, your best players all being, like, juniors and seniors. You don't think of your leader always being a senior, right? Like, because typically to be elite in college basketball, typically, like, you're going to have, like, an NBA pick there that's going to be a sophomore or a freshman. And I know UConn didn't necessarily have that last year. So, like I said, maybe the transfer portal era has kind of changed that. But, like, to know that three of your five starters here, their hourglass is the sand is slipping out of it. That doesn't usually happen on championship teams. You might have some juniors that, you know, you or sophomores you know that are going to declare for the draft. But, like, you know without a shadow of a doubt that this team is old and that, you know, you're running out of time with them. And that's why I say to embrace it. Connect, Josiah, and Santee. They can't come back. Their college careers are over. What they do these next couple weeks, you know, will define their entire careers at Tennessee. These final games. And when you watch them play, it does feel like they know that. And, you know, that's been the message, Bob, all year long from Josiah and Santee. As people look at their stats and people argue about what they need to do offensively and how good they actually are, both guys just said, hey, we want to win. That's what we want our legacy to be when we leave. Winners. Let's just win. And I can't help but think that last night when you see Josiah have two big blocks in the post and watch Santee the last couple weeks just become a defensive magician with the way he can, you know, reach around guys and steal the ball. Like, he has really mastered defense, pesky, annoying defense.
They have a chance if Tennessee could at least get to the Final Four and perhaps win the whole thing. I mean, they could have a legacy or be part of a legacy that nobody else has here. You know, currently 103 wins, 48 losses during their time here, talking about Triple J and Santee. SEC tournament title a couple seasons ago, now a regular season title. I mean, they've been part of some really special stuff, and I'm with you, John. I think that you can see it just – as we talked about earlier, just the way they reacted to that win last night and their combined 8 points scored, but all the other little things, the win is what matters. That's really what's first and front and center for them.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, when you just look at it from that perspective, I imagine – I haven't seen anybody really talk about it. I didn't see Tennessee put out a release. I imagine Josiah is now the all-time wins leader at Tennessee. I mean, by math, he has 110 wins in his 5 years here. Now, I know that gets a little skewed because he got to be here for 5 years because of COVID. But, like, no one's won more games in Orange than Josiah. But, yeah, Bobby, talk about winning those championships. I mean, to get both a tournament and regular season championship for Josiah and Santee, I mean, the last time Tennessee won the conference tournament, here's their conference tournament championships in history. 79, 43, 41 and 36. Their conference regular season championships, 18. Of course, you wouldn't have a tournament champion on there unless, you know, I guess somebody possibly could have been on 18 and 22. But either way, 2008, 2000, 82. So 77, you might have had somebody on there that, you know, won both the regular season and the conference tournament. 72, 67, 43. Tennessee swept there, won both. So, like, point being, like, there's been, like, maybe three or four guys in Tennessee history, at least since World War II, that you could look at and say won both the conference championship and a regular season championship here at Tennessee. You know, and you know, of course, add Zakai to that list as well. Add Jonas to that list as well. They were on that team in 2021. But Tennessee is doing things that not a lot of teams ever have done before here in Knoxville. They're champions, and they need to finish strong. But again, I keep saying last night was the first step, and it was. It was. Anything else about the South Carolina game? No? Yeah. It just felt preordained. To me last night. That's how I felt all day yesterday. I told you I was waiting around on it like a football game, and it felt that way, you know, just all day, just sitting there waiting. Is it 7 o'clock yet? Is it 7 o'clock yet? Nope, not yet. Still 4 more hours. Okay, still 2 more hours. But you just knew that you were going to be celebrating a championship last night, and you took advantage of it, and you got it done. You didn't choke. despite all the negative people in the fan base with negative energy waiting with their cups on. I got my cups on. I'll take it off.
The Drive had some callers yesterday. Doing, and, you know, credit to Russ. He doesn't put up with it at this point. It's like, just move on. It's ridiculous.
If you're waiting to be negative about this team, like, just I don't want to be fan police, but, like, I would ask, what's the point of being a fan?
Yeah.
What's the point of being a fan if you can't just, like, be optimistic about your team right now? They've given you reasons to be optimistic. Just enjoy it. Is it going to hurt if they lose and come up short? Yeah. But guess what? It's going to hurt when they lose and come up short, even if you're telling people they're going to lose and come up short. You saying, well, at least I was right. It doesn't actually make you feel better. It doesn't actually make you feel better. Hour one in the books. We'll kick off hour two looking at some other stuff from yesterday that wasn't Tennessee basketball related. It's the morning show on Fan Run Radio. Everybody.